Welcome to the Daily Elevated. Today, my guest is Alaric Barca, an artist and animal activist who's been vegan for 8 years. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself, how you became vegan, and what are some of the things that we should know about veganism that most people don't know?
Wow, that's really, I think there's a book that can be written with that. But the way I came about was, you know, we didn't have a lot of food, like what you would call good food in American culture growing up. The first time that I had a real steak, meaning farm to fork, no factory, I didn't like it. We marinated it. My wife ended up finishing it for me. I could taste the fat, the tendons. So I just decided for myself, you know what? I've been eating processed meat. I know processed meat's not good for me. So I just stopped eating meat after that steak because I never liked chicken. I never liked ham. So I was never really interested in meat. So for me, it's really easy. And I never really had a, like Schwarzenegger, I think a lot of my earlier, using protein to build muscle was from whey. But obviously whey can cause a lot of inflammation as you get older, which Schwarzenegger still uses whey, although he tries to be plant-based, probably because of the heart attacks.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think as far as answering what is being vegan, there's what, I don't want to pick on the right, but I've seen people on Fox News, and I'm not trying to pick on Fox News, but make all sorts of weird allegations about vegans, and they try to conflate progressives with vegans. And most progressives that I know, and this is anecdotal, I'm not trying to say I've got studies. Most progressives I know are foodies. They love food. They eat everything, including plant-based stuff. But so, like, you know, they attack it. And then now the new thing is they call us soy boys. And that's a way to, you know, emasculate men. But the weird thing for me was finding out that as far as building muscle, our body doesn't, like, eat protein and then store protein in our muscles. It breaks down the amino acids, stores the amino acids in different places, and only uses the amino acids as we need them for rebuilding. So, I mean, even if you're eating a lot of meat, you still don't know if it's amino acids that came from your kidneys, if it's amino acids that came from something you ate, unless you have those kind of blood tests or whatever. I know some bodybuilders actually have every single thing in their bloodstream tested. But so putting on muscle, in my opinion, really has nothing to do with eating meat and keeping on muscle. But I mean, I'm sure there's people out there that want to argue that. But I mean, I haven't been working out in a long time because I've been working on all the art, but my biceps were at 22 inches all the way around. I mean, my body fat was never super low, but anyway, I don't know if that helps.
No, you weren't a fitness guy. You were a bodybuilder, so you weren't looking to.
I think I did the best I could with what I knew.
So. Yeah, and when were you working out? Like in your heyday, was it the like 2000s or?
Well, I think it was always an on again, off again thing. Mm-hmm. I know I tried to do it more when I was in college because, you know, and I didn't have any luck meeting girls in college, but, you know, I wanted to not look like a total goof. So I tried to be somewhat fit, but, I was also, you know, my degree was theater arts ultimately. So that, you know,
that's interesting because, you know, if someone meets you, like when I met you, for instance, I was like, that's really cool art, and he has good size. But someone that sees you would be really thrown off if they knew you had a degree in theater arts and you were vegan and you're an animal lover. So you kind of catch them off guard with that, which is really cool because I feel I do something similar to people as well when they first meet me and they see me and whatever preconceived notions they may have of you right upon meeting you and then talking to you. So that's an interesting part about you that I didn't know when I first met you, but it actually adds depth to who you are.
Well, you know, when they go, oh, you have a degree, what in? You'll get like, oh, like people are really excited when they hear you have a degree. Then you go, oh, it's, well, it was, the focus was directing. So I have a theater art. So I say theater arts, and then you get that, oh.
You know, I was thinking the other day, one of my deep thoughts about being on stage, being in theater, and how critically important it is to figuring yourself out. Because there's not many times in life where we really put ourselves out for ridicule, where we show people, hey, I've been trying this. Did I do good? And when you're on stage, you are literally doing that to every single person watching you. All they're doing is critiquing what you're doing. And you don't often get a chance to express yourself as someone else, whether it's video games and stuff like that. Yeah, but in front of other people, you are literally acting out, being in a different environment, which is really incredible. It really helps your mind go to a place where you often don't have that. Like, you wouldn't really do something like that at home by yourself. So I've always loved theater and art and, you know, any kind of performing arts, but I think I appreciate it more since I've have that thought.
Yeah. I mean, and theater is like an every night thing. The performance can change from night to night, and the experience. I directed Harold Pinter's The Dumb Waiter, which is about two hitmen waiting to hear about a job, for those who have read it or seen. And one night, there was a person in the audience shaking Tic Tacs Tic Tacs the whole time. And one of the actors was just finally lost it and kicked part of the set over. And I'm actually filming that night, so I have it on VHS somewhere. But yeah, it was, you know, and that happens in theater. Like, when
absolutely. Same with the classical music performance. People, if there's someone who keeps coughing, those auditoriums are made so you can hear every single thing. Like, if you go to the Los Angeles Symphony over at the Walt Disney Concert Hall, you can literally hear, it's incredible. You can hear the pages being turned on the music sheet by one of the performers. Like, that's how far the sound travels. And when someone keeps coughing or when people are talking, you really hear it. And I can imagine as a performer, when you're such a perfectionist at your art, if you're doing it at that level, to have someone just constantly interrupting you does get annoying. I've seen videos, like you say, where performers get tired of one of the audience members doing what they're doing.
We get mad at band members for stopping shows for doing it too. But I mean, realistically, if somebody's hucking stuff at you on stage, I mean, I understand the propensity to stop and go, hey, I'm going to jump down there and beat the stuffing out of you.
Yeah. So, okay, vegan. Can you explain to me what it is and what the deeper meaning is about it? Like, is there a worldview that is typically adopted by vegans, or?
I think because there's so few, and that's one of the things that gets misrepresented. So if you take that we have about 8 billion people on this planet, and understandably some of them are children and babies, it's still less than half of 1% of the population, of the whole global population, statistically, that refrains from eating meat. So out of 8 billion people, you're talking about the tiniest number. But when you see people on there making fun of vegans, it's kind of like they act like there's this gigantic army that's assembled about to take their meat away. Even Mike Pence one time, you know, it just blew my mind that he was speaking to him. We're not going to let them take your hamburgers away. We're going to defend your hand. He literally said he was going to defend hamburgers. Hamburgers have never been jeopardized. Once were you in danger of losing access to meat. But I guess one of the things, and being vegan ultimately means trying to reduce the impact that you have on creating torture for other life forms and even human beings. I mean, we don't think about the exploitation of immigrants in slaughterhouses. We don't think about people that have to take those jobs that don't want them. I mean, it's horrifying. I've heard kids, I live near Modesto, and there's a slaughterhouse down there, and I've had kids say, you know, it's the only opportunity we had, and I had to quit. It was too much. One of my friends almost committed suicide watching what we had to do, killing these animals in such volume. And when you drive through California, everyone thinks that California is progressive. Northern California, you see Trump banners still.
Oh, yeah.
It's, and even when I was in Orange County, I couldn't believe how much Trump support there still was in Southern California.
Absolutely.
But our voters may be progressive. But I think Northern California, they must not be out and voting, because I mean, it's way more this way than, I'm pointing to the right. It's way more to the right than it is to the left. I mean, I would say there's parts of California that, if you thought, it wouldn't be any different than talking to someone from Iowa or Utah, not Utah, Texas, or is that Utah, where Napoleon Dynamite is filmed.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, Orange County is definitely, especially the southern parts, heavy Republican. That's where I grew up, is in Orange County. So okay. I could definitely attest to that. I have a lot of friends who are right-leaning, who moved out of LA to go to Orange County, especially during the COVID crisis, because, you know, Orange County was more open, and they kind of pulled a Florida, you could say. And like you're saying, these slaughterhouses do exist in parts where you typically have less opportunity. They're not in rich areas, like, they're not in the middle of Hollywood. These are out where there's pastures and there's room for animals. And then people in those areas tend to take the jobs that are available to them, like you said. I remember reading one time that says if everybody was vegan, there'd be so many more animal deaths because of the amount of land that you would have to harvest. And running those machines over the land kills tons of animals just by default because they're in there, like these big crop, you know, whatever big tractors and stuff that they use. Now, that was the argument that I heard a long time ago. It stuck with me. I've never looked into it. And I assume because of technology, there's ways to make that not happen. But have you heard that argument before where basically says if everyone was vegan, it would kill tons of animals because they're just in there in the land that has to get harvested?
I know that animals have to eat, and most of them, you know, we're eating their muscle that comes from eating grass and oats, and, you know. So, but I mean, our human beings as an impact, you have to wait. I mean, I don't even know how to answer, but I mean, I don't agree that that would be the case. But I mean, they're chopping down the rainforest to graze more and more cattle. Which is incredible. I mean, I don't want to get onto the thing because I don't know anything about the environmental issue. And people, oh, you're not one of those environmental nuts. I was like, no, not, you know, I wouldn't try to manipulate people into reducing their meat eating. If anything, if I was going to talk to people about reducing meat, I would use David Sinclair's doctor. I know you're familiar with Dr. David Sinclair. Mm-hmm. And it's not like he's advocating, he doesn't want to be more plant-based. But we don't think about the feces from all the cattle going into the water. We don't think about the feces from the chickens and the pigs. I mean, I'm not really sure about the science side of what it would take to be a more plant-based world. But I know that soil depletion is an issue in any time, because we still have to grow fruits and vegetables. But it is interesting that the American government spends 75% of its agricultural budget to meat and 25% to, you know, fruits and vegetables.
That's interesting. I didn't know that fact.
Well, I mean, that was 1 year that I looked. I don't know what the statistics. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I'm going to try to stay as anecdotal as possible, as experience.
Yeah, of course.
But when you think about, I don't even know what the accurate statistic is, but when you think about the possibility that 65 billion, which is an enormous number, but it doesn't sound like it, killing 65 billion land animals a year to feed 8 billion people is scary. Because, I mean, one, there are people involved in killing these animals. And people, when they start killing, and I don't want to bring up World War II, but they develop a bloodlust. There's a lot of hunters that, like, they have to go hunt because they develop this need to kill. I'm not picking on anybody. I've had people tell me I just have to do it. And then there's a lot of people too that aren't humane about it. And we have a lot of poaching here in California too.
The way I look at all arguments is the same. I try to break them down to its most basic, and then I build up from there, right? So there's a lot of arguments for and against and all that stuff. I've heard stuff on both sides. I've seen studies on both sides, right? The way I look at it is this. We have to, like you said, we have to absorb something for energy or else we die. Yeah. Right? We eat to live. Now, the body has to work to digest that. And every time your body has to work for something, you have damaged DNA because it has to work and it creates inflammation and heat. So the harder our body has to work at something, the more damage we cause to it. Now, I've heard the carnivore diet's good. I don't agree with it. I mean, just from a logical perspective, it doesn't make sense that you would only eat meat, which is extremely hard to break down, that has a lot of oxidation, or that causes a lot of oxidation, which then harms your actual cells and your DNA. Because processing meat is extremely hard. You're literally absorbing another flesh bean into you. Eating plants. Here's where I, you know, what I think about it. I've heard that, well, as I said on both sides, that number one, fiber is great for you. I've heard people say that eating plants is hard to digest because you don't digest plant cellulose. So it can be, you know, inflammatory. I believe that having a little bit of everything in moderation is pretty much one of the most important things in life that I've come to learn in any scenario, whether it be relationships or what food you eat or what you spend your time doing. However, say for the last maybe 10 years, I don't really eat a lot of red meat because of the simple fact that it made sense to me that it's a lot of work for the body to do. If I'm trying to live as long as I can so I can be downloaded into a computer, which is, you know, one of my goals.
I'm hoping for singularity myself, so.
Yeah, exactly. I don't want to die. So I've stopped eating so much red meat. I do eat chicken. That's chicken and tuna is basically the bulk of the actual, you know, where I get my protein from other than whey protein. And, I think that as humans, if we're going to have to do something, why not do it the easiest way? So I know it takes a lot more work to have an animal be born, raise it, create the space for it to live, kill it, skin it, freeze it, transport it to whatever location it's going to be cooked, unfreeze it, cook it, serve it, and eat it. That takes a lot more man hours and more, a lot more energy than growing a plant, chopping it down, and, you know, transporting it without having to be frozen, and then consuming it. And then upon consuming that plant, the body does a lot less work to digest it. You know, whatever kind of plant, or, you know, anything that's not meat is what I meant to say. So to me, it makes logical sense that eating less meat or eating no meat is better for your body. So I didn't tell you that before, but that's my view on, you know, on meat and things like that. I still do eat chicken. I have a hamburger here and, you know, here and again, but it's not something that I wake up and say, I need to eat red meat.
Well, I mean, living where I do, I mean, every meat, you can't. Well, there's the other issue too. And that goes back to the soy boy thing is, in our culture, meat is tied to masculinity.
Yeah.
And masculinity is becoming a bigger and bigger issue because, a lot of older people, not to pick on older people, I'm not picking up it, but I'm hearing them, yeah, well, when I was a kid, there was men and there was women. And it's like, okay, well, not that issue aside, because it's being promoted so much on social media and movies, I've got to be more of a man. I've got to eat more meat. I've got to do this. But it's all about projecting. And then when you talk to, I have some of my neighbors, a lot of them are hunters. Oh, it's not about masculinity. It's like, really? I disagree with you, but they like kind of like get kind of, oh no, it's not about me being a man. It's like, okay. But I mean, I personally think that masculinity is tied to, I mean, why at football games is there so much red meat being out in the parking? And that's another hard thing too. I don't understand sports in the sense that I don't watch professional sports, and that really cuts down my man factor.
There's definitely something to be said about the culture behind it. Absolutely. It has that culture of being something where people make money from. So I get that. It's part of their culture, which I get that. And it's manly, which, whether it's because, you know, you had to go hunt and actually kill the animal, and that takes a certain type of person. And those types of people propagate that idea of the manliness of the meat, which has now been taken over by the right and the Republicans, which kind of use that to get voters to stick with them. That's all it is. I mean, it's, in reality, most of those guys are on crazy diets. They're older. They're not out there eating steak every day. You know, the doctor's like, cut it down. You got to eat less red meat. But they're going to try to get the votes. So they're going to say whatever needs to get said to get those votes and keep those people in their party.
And one of the issues I have to confront with that, because the right traditionally has a religious base, is that people look at my art and they go, he's got to be a Satan. Well, I'm not a Satan. I know a lot about the history of it. And I'm horrified when people come to my table and start telling me stuff about the occult that isn't true because of the way mythologies change. But when it comes to meat, we have to think about who owns the slaughterhouses. And unfortunately, these are incredibly, the money they create is incredible. And a lot of them are owned by either people who are religious or they're owned by, I mean, the Southern Baptists own a lot of slaughterhouses. If you think about the people that own them, not the church itself. And being brought up Southern Baptist and then learning about all the weird things that we were taught about being right about the Bible that they're completely wrong about. Yeah, it's really funny. They pick on Jehovah's Witnesses and Mormons, but it's like Southern Baptists, based on what it actually says, way, way off. Hopefully there's not a Southern Baptist out there going, yeah, you're a jerk, because I can actually... I don't want to get into a religious debate, but and that's another thing I had down in Orange County was that Saddleback Church. They usually protest WonderCon, but when I was there, the attendance was so low that they didn't do their normal protests. But I guess they really go after people, and that's another thing.
Which con? What's it called?
I think it's the one that's right by the stadium there in Anaheim. Is that Orange County?
Yeah, yeah.
It's called the Saddleback Church, and it's enormous.
But what's the convention that they protest? What's it?
WonderCon.
And why do they protest it?
Well, even though they have a table there, because I guess they have a school, it's because, you know, the same reason Christians protest Harry Potter and the woke. They're just saying that comic books are immoral and they teach bad values.
Oh, really? I haven't heard that before. I mean, as far as them protesting a convention.
I hadn't heard about it until I went down there. And people, I didn't. It was the I was telling. So one of them was coming over to my table and making fun of my art. And then one of them from the, so they took their badges off, so I didn't know from. Mm-hmm. But one of them, while I was unloading, like when the show was over, came and stood in the middle of my booth while I unloaded to be inconvenient to me. I just ignored them. And so I'm not 100% positive they were all from Saddleback, but it was from one of the churches that were in there.
Mm-hmm.
And not to impugn anybody if I'm wrong.
Do you think it's gotten easier to be vegan as time goes on, or do you think it's just the same?
It's worse. It's harder.
Really?
Well, I think the vegans that we see out there are making it worse. There are certain podcasts, one of which is about, according to them, they're going to spend $100 million to do children's programming, to reprogram children's brains, to eat meat, and to know there's only two genders. And they're coming after vegans harder than that, and they have a way bigger audience. It's harder. The issue, back to what I was kind of wanting to get, is that the idea of the torture doesn't seem to bother people that I come in contact with. And I really first became aware of the torture, and this isn't to pick on one country, but we know what happened. I mean, most people know what happened, is that China has Yulin, South Korea has Baknal, and they celebrate the torture of animals with those festivals. But year round, they're cooking animals alive because they want that flavor from the terror and the pain that the chemicals that are produced. And there are Chinese butchers who actually spend their time trying to find new ways to torture these animals, which is horrifying because I love dogs so much. But, and I think Facebook has really limited our ability, but when Matt Damon and Helen Mirren and some other actors came out and said, we should protest Yulin, we should stop Yulin. So what those guys did is they went out, tortured the animals, filmed it, cut their heads off, put them on pikes, and they did a FU message to the West. You know, this is what we do. And you can, but it, when I talk, I've talked to people from the dog meat trade, like people that were in it that do it. And they go, it's about our dominance over America.
It's a delicacy where you torture the animal before you kill it.
I truly believe if you ever look at the women that are low torturing dogs alive, they're smiling, they're enjoying, they're having the time of their life.
This is my first time hearing about this stuff. So that's why I'm asking questions. So this is a thing people do where they take like sadistic pleasure in torturing animals, or is there like, or do they actually believe that the taste is better if they torture the animal before killing it?
I think they've gotten accustomed to the flavor and it becomes acidic, you know, because it's part of its adrenaline.
I could definitely see that.
Like, for, you know, a lot of other chefs, like, we don't want our meat to taste that way. We want it to be happy before we slaughter.
Yeah.
We want to flavor it ourselves. But for whatever reason, Asian cultures have, and I'm not just picking on them because they do it in South America. They do it.
Sure. But it's more prevalent there is what you're saying.
But it happens in Africa too. I don't think they do it for pleasure there. They may, I don't know. Mm. I mean, I know those guys chopping up gorillas seem to really freaking love it, but but the festivals, Yulin and Baknal, are about celebrating torture.
Mm.
And those are older, but the people in the dog meat trade, because you'll hear people come from, oh, I've never seen that in China. The people, they just laugh because it's everywhere. And it's not just, you know, they do it on the side of the road. They do it to donkeys and all kinds of things.
So just to clarify, do they torture the animal while cooking it, or do they torture, kill it, then cook it, or how does it?
They torture it while it's... So usually what happens is there's a Vietnamese syndicate that goes out and kidnaps pets from people's homes. Then they take them and sell them at market. Then they're generally tortured while they're either put in bags and deprived of water. Then they're put in crates, and a lot of times they're electrocuted, kicked, stomped. But the pleasure factor is when they cook them alive.
Mm.
Cook the dog, and you'll see it. They'll put them on barbecues, like those little metal rods, or they will blow. They will actually break their legs and throw them into a wok and boil. They break their bones so they can't get out when they're boiling.
Yeah, yeah.
And you'll see a lot. There's lots of pictures. If you type in Yulin, you'll see stuff you won't
forget. You know, when I was in Vietnam, I did see a dog on a stick that was being roasted for sale. One thing I never realized about like Southeast Asia is how many stray dogs there are everywhere. Like there's no animal control. Dogs just, they, you know, and a lot of them are very sickly looking because they're eating garbage or whatever food that they can find. So to me, I thought in my head, and you know, again, my exposure to this is very limited. To me, it looks like it was just easy food for them because they're just everywhere. So they just grab one.
South America is like that. South America, they kill and eat animals off the street.
But those animals aren't even healthy. That was a weird thing. It's like the dogs that I see all around, they're skinny. They don't, you know, they don't look healthy.
They're born into hell already. They obviously don't spay and neuter their pets out there. So they're just reproducing. And that's an issue too. The problem is it's complicated. You know, as a person who doesn't eat meat, the issues, that's why I don't tell people what to do. I don't suggest what people do. I try to inform people that, look, it's really, really bad. It's worse than you. Even the dairy industry is, in my opinion, is demonic when you look at the whole thing. And then you have these girls doing YouTube videos. Well, we felt bad that the cat, we killed the baby in front of the mom. So we skinned the calf and gave her back its skin so she'd be warm, so she could be with her baby. And they're just laughing about, you know, how they, you know, they use these cows until they don't give milk anymore. And they send them to the slaughterhouse.
And this stuff is like, is it on TikTok or where?
You can find all kinds of nasty things towards vegan on YouTube.
Wow. So it seems like people do this specifically just to
get likes.
And also as a sadistic way to kind of pick on vegans who they somehow, I mean, there's no one I hate enough to kill an animal, skin it, and then film it. Like, that's a level of perversion that I think goes much deeper. I think that's something innate, or not innate, but something in that person that maybe they're justifying their whatever they're doing to the animal because of vegans or because they need to show someone this. When, I mean, I think that's like some deep psychological issues that they're already dealing with beforehand, which is scary.
Yes.
Very scary.
Well, one of the things I was going to bring up in a weird way with our legal system, I'm going to pick on Miami, Dade, the Parkland shooter, the kid that went into school and killed, they knew that he tortured animals, but they kind of looked the other way. And if you look in areas, the warning signs, there's the McDonald trifecta. If they torture animals, wet the bed, and set fires, a really good chance you're dealing with someone who's going to be a serial killer or extreme criminal activity. And they could have actually had that kid locked up a long time ahead of him because he was torturing animals.
Yeah.
Kids in Miami will set dogs or raccoons or cage them and set them on fire, and they don't even prosecute.
Mm.
So I have a real issue with the legal system in Miami-Dade, and don't come after me for it. That's just my opinion.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, there definitely is a long history of people who torture animals to do a lot of sorts of nasty things, especially to humans. I know Nero, the Roman emperor, would torture animals. Vlad the Impaler, also known as Dracula, he would torture, you know, animals, and when he was captive for, I believe, 10 years. But yeah, there's a really sick thing about people who just like to take life from something else. And I don't know if it comes from like feeling powerless in whatever situation. So if they can assert their power over an animal that is essentially helpless, that they feel more of a man. But then at that point, I don't know if that comes from this, maybe some abuse they had as a child or whatever issues. Like it is a deep place where that comes from.
You just brought up an amazing point. That's the whole thing about the diversity of the human experience. We can all be taught the same things at school and still react to them completely different and interpret them differently. But serial killers generally start out with animals. They work their way up to bigger and bigger things until they finally can go and kill people. Because I would imagine that can't be, like, I can't imagine what went through Charles Ng's head, the stuff that man did here in Northern California. As sadistic as he was.
Who was this Charles who?
Charles Ng.
Charles Ng.
Yeah, he worked in the nut. There was two of them. They were a team. And like, one of the people that I remember that they killed, they took this woman and her kid, they killed the baby brutally, and then they kept taunting her, making her do stuff and torturing her, saying, if you don't do this, you won't see your baby again. And the baby was already dead. I think anytime you can kill a baby, no remorse, there's...
Yeah, that's a different level of evil there.
Yeah, I just
And these guys did this in what decade, do you know, or like the 90s or?
Oh gosh, he was convicted in 1999, so probably the 90s.
Oh wow, okay, so this is fairly recent. It's not like the 60s or anything like that.
It was Leonard Lake and Charles Ng.
So there's an argument that goes like this: the only reason why vegans or, you know, any kind of animal activists don't like us killing animals is because they see the animal and they see human traits in the animal, like anthropomorphic type traits. So for instance, one thing that I've heard is that people love dogs so much because dogs have evolved to mimic our facial muscles. So they've evolved to enhance their facial muscles to mimic what humans do. And that's why people love dogs so much compared to like a cow, which has less facial expressions. And then if you go all the way down to a cockroach, obviously a cockroach, really, we can't really find much in common with them. So there is a philosophical question is, and I guess this kind of depends on each individual person's level of commitment to not killing animals, or it does it extend to all living beings, or is it more so animals?
I think with me, I just, there's a word that gets misconstrued, but I personally don't appreciate people's entitlement to torture something they can't fight back. You know, and then being bred to be inside of a system where you're tortured your whole life until you're slaughtered. I just have a philosophical issue with that personally, and I think that's where that comes from. But there is a theory in anthropology that if it wasn't for our relationship with dogs, we might not have evolved, and Neanderthals would have won because they were physically superior to what became Homo sapiens. And my reference for that is a girl on YouTube who calls herself the Gut Sick Gibbon. I'm promoting somebody's website, sorry. But she was talking about the theory. I mean, she's just exposing a theory about our relationship with dogs. I didn't fall in love with dogs till later in life. I didn't have, you know, pets and stuff growing up. So we got a dog about 11 years ago, and that kind of started it. Where I started, you know, realizing that, you know, he needed my protection. and that people are surprised how many people are really angry about people having animals. I had a neighbor, they moved out 2 houses down, but I would walk all 4 of my dogs, and they would, I'd walk by, oh, look, the effing circus is back in town, you know?
Here in Hollywood, it's complete opposite. Like here, I mean, Starbucks gives up, what do they call it? They call it a puffuccino or a puppuccino,
yeah.
Where it's like a little cup with, I think, sour whipped cream or something like that. And here it's a culture. Like you can't deny anyone from coming in with a dog anywhere here. And, I mean, it's a culture here.
Can I out Starbucks? Can we do a little?
Absolutely. Talk? Absolutely.
Okay. So I do shows in Seattle where Starbucks started, and then around Central and Northern California and Southern California. And when you talk to baristas, now this is coming from, it's secondhand information, but it's from multiple baristas in different cities. They say Starbucks imports their coffee from all over the world. And specifically Indonesia is one of the big ones. But they roast their coffee beans with meat. And in doing that to get that flavor, they're not telling people that the coffee bin is not vegan. And they're still charging extra for, you know, vegan whipped cream when the coffee may not be. You don't know where it came from.
So yeah, this is the first time I've heard of it. So you roast coffee with meat on it?
With meat in with the coffee roasting process, the flavoring.
Interesting. I've never heard of that.
And wine, a lot of like apothic wine, for example, is one that's really open about that. They, in the fining process of making wine, they use meat and eggs. So that's why people are like, what do you mean? People are always like, noodles aren't vegan. I go, no, there's eggs in them.
Yeah, and yeah, yeah.
Wine is, of course not. Not all wine is vegan or vegetarian. Not all cheese is vegetarian. Some of it has intestines in the cheese.
Yeah, I definitely need to go down a rabbit hole with that because I've never heard of it, but it's interesting. I know everything has been done to get flavor out of coffee. That's for sure. I even ate coffee beans that were pooped out of a on like some kind of a rodent when I was in Bali.
It was pooped out of a rodent?
Yeah, it's one of the most expensive, or if not the most expensive coffee in the world, where they feed it to. It looks like a lemur, and I don't know, some kind of animal, and it poops it out. And because of the digestive process, I guess what it does do it is it makes it super tasty. And I had this coffee, and I'll tell you, it tastes damn good. It was incredible. So I don't know if they mixed it with something else, but I mean,
I don't know if I could, even before I was vegan, if I'd be that ballsy. but I do know that I don't like coffee from restaurants. It's always burnt. Because I used to be a supervisor at Borders Books. And we had Seattle's Best, which is still Starbucks.
By the way, I like Borders over Barnes and Noble. Yeah, I was a Borders guy.
And I was until I got let go when they started downsizing before they went out of business.
Yeah.
I like Borders till I got let go.
You're also in the movie industry.
Well, so I work with a director named James Balsamo, and his company is called Acid Bath Productions. They are mostly, a lot of the movies that I've worked on are literally, you can go into Walmart or go on Amazon and buy one that I've worked on. But in December, I filmed a scene with Daniel Roebuck, who was in a lot of Rob Zombie films, his two Halloweens, Three from Hell. He's Grandpa Munster in Rob Zombie's Munsters.
Ah.
So I did a scene with him in a movie called Dead Male.
Hmm.
And then right now, though, James, I did the production artwork with James, is working on a movie called Robot Dracula. And it looks like Malcolm McDowell is going to star in it, which, people go, oh, Malcolm McDowell's old. Well, people get old. But it's still Malcolm McDowell, Clockwork Orange. I mean, I get to be in the movie associated.
Right. That's awesome. Part. Yeah.
So you'll see Eric Roberts was in the first one that I did. It's called It Wants Blood, and I designed the monster. That was the first thing.
It all comes from because you got fired from Borders.
Well, what happened was I started out trying to be a painter, and I met an artist, a specific artist. And what he taught me was something you think you should know about, like, if you're going to be an artist, you're going to do it as a living. You have to keep making stuff. You have to keep putting it out there. You have to brand and establish that you're really going to do this. Because a lot of people are at home making great art. They don't put it out there. Nobody knows who they are. And they don't think that, you really do need to establish yourself. And do that. And a lot of people won't finish art. And finishing stuff, good, bad, or indifferent, because a lot of the stuff that I've created that I hate, the stuff that I hate is the stuff that sells.
It's interesting that you say that, because making art into a business requires a lot of organization, and very creative people typically lack a lot of organization. So that's a very true statement, because even I do find myself doing stuff like that, where I'll start something and jump to a different project.
And there's a word for that. And I forgot what it was, but what happened was, when I was at Borders, a lot of people working there because they want to be writers. But guess what they don't do?
They don't. That's interesting. I didn't know that.
There's a lot. They're like, oh, I'm going to be a writer. I'm going to be a writer. Well, what have you written? Well, I've got some really great ideas. They do. And some people have really great ideas, and they think about them, and they'll write a couple paragraphs. But it doesn't occur. Well, I can't sell a short story, so I'm not going to write it. Well, look what Clive Barker did when he wrote the Books of Blood. He was just writing those for his friends. But once his career, you can't just say, oh, if I write short stories, no one's going to read me. If I write poetry, nobody's going to read me. It's sort of but it does sometimes people to say do the work.
The entire concept of pitting anyone who doesn't eat meat compared to people who don't, there's real politicizing that goes on. And I think that's a byproduct of this us versus them type of narrative that's being pushed in not only this specific area, but in every area. And it makes people do things so that they fit in with the group. Because, think about it. If you're trying to fit into, let's just say, I don't know, whatever culture that you grow up in, let's say a very, very Republican area, you're going to do stuff to fit in, especially when you're younger, because you just want to fit into a tribe when you're younger. And you'll do things that, maybe when you're older, you'll be like, oh, I can't believe I did that. I'm so embarrassed about it. It happens all the time. I've done it. I'm sure you've done it. People continue to do things when they're young.
I'm still kind of stupid, but I don't have that condescending attitude that I see a lot of. I don't want to pick on other vegans, but a lot of vegans get on there. They're like, you got to do this. Listen to me. It's like, really? I wouldn't listen to you if I was somebody else.
No, I feel like when you tell someone that they have to do something, you become like the people who you are against. So the people who say you have to eat meat, why the hell would you eat plants? It's vice versa. If you become that person, then really someone's going to feel like, well, everyone's telling me what to do. Like, I want to do what I want to do. So it's good that you're coming at it from that angle, just using logic and facts to try to guide what people's decisions are rather than tell them what they should be.
Well, and one of the other things is, if more people were willing to try more plant-based foods, chefs, if the demand was there, would create, there's a lot of delicious vegan food, but the food industry wants you to believe, no, that's not the case. Some of the desserts, like Whole Foods has amazing vegan desserts, and I'm not talking in the frozen section. And it's like, but if there was a demand for it, they just to cut back on the religious run meat industry. And it's another thing I want to kind of point out. There's verses in the Bible that are really clear that God doesn't want you to torture animals. One of them is in Proverbs 12. And you can tell other, you can tell Christians, hey, look, you know, even the law of Noah, which the Catholics left out because it was so similar to the Ten Commandments, says you can't eat an animal that's been tortured. You also can't sacrifice an animal that's been tortured, which I am not happy about animal sacrifice, obviously. But, you know, it's in there, but you go, oh, no, that doesn't apply to me. It's like, hey.
Let me tell you what I see from where I live, because you said that you live in an area where it's more kind of blue collar slaughterhouses in the area kind of stuff. Where I live here in Hollywood, it is almost the complete opposite. So here, everyone, not everyone, but there's a significant portion of people who are vegan, don't eat meat. Dogs are everywhere, you know, and everywhere meaning with them. And they are very anti, not anti, but they basically are against meat consumption. And it's growing quicker. Well, I mean, it's been growing ever since I can remember, but it's growing at a faster pace. So with things like this, with anything that has to do with a change of a culture or a difference from the norm, I know it always starts in cities and then spreads out everywhere else. Well, typically when it comes to something like this, but that's what I see here. I see people rejecting meat, going towards plant-based, I mean, a lot of plant-based, and that's what I see here. So I'm sure that probably sounds good to you compared to things that you see on your end.
Well, I think that Sinclair, once again, David Sinclair, I'm a big fan of Sinclair. I think his research, because I mean, Hollywood, LA, people want to stay beautiful. And I'm always surprised when I see actors kind of, I mean, the technology and the research and the information is there to start reversing the age process, the aging process in your face, everything. And I think I mentioned to you that I didn't try metformin, mm-hmm. but I did, and I got a prescription online from metformin to include that with taking the NMN.
Mm.
And because I mean, I'm more worried about my brain than look. And I'm really into functional mushrooms too, because both my parents, even though I was adopted, and I was adopted, my parents were in their 50s when they adopted me. Mm. They both died from dementia. They had both had Alzheimer's. And watching that slow progression just scared the living snot out of me, because it's terrifying and it's terrible to watch every single day, watch somebody decline that way. And so brain health is really super important to me. And I know that not everything. And I've had people, when I talk about it's called the amyloid beta theory about why we get that. I've had people completely lose their mind on me for suggesting that it's food related. Hmm. But I mean, food is what we're made up of. So, I mean, I don't see why it's so far out of the realm of reason that what we eat causes our sickness.
People who stick to that manly thing through hell and high water, a lot of the older people, who didn't have any of the knowledge that we have, they'll stick to the guns and say that meat is the best thing. Meanwhile, they can barely move. They have colon cancer. They have all these ailments and stuff like that. But to the day they'll, you know, they die, they'll swear that need to eat meat. And we're starting to see with the research coming out, like people like David Sinclair and many others, that that's not the way to live optimally for a long, healthy life. So I think things are changing because people are starting to learn that the science is really saying, like, yeah, I mean, eating meat is not the best thing to do for your body. And I think slowly people are wising up and saying, yeah, I mean, I could act manly and just, you know, go eat at Texas Roadhouse every single day of my life. But if I want to be healthy, that's probably not the best choice for me going forward.
I think the middle of the country, and I'm not trying to, I'm characterizing things that I don't know entirely about, but I mean, Texas and Utah, I'm a little bit familiar. The old way, they don't want the thinkings of big cities, you know, the more rural areas. And they're going to resist that. And it's going to get tied into the things that threaten their religious ideas.
Yeah. As far as having someone scared of change that lives in those areas that experience least amount of change compared to cities, 100% agree. Where I really saw it was when I was on my bike ride across America, because I stopped through many, many tiny little towns in middle of nowhere, Ohio, Texas.
Wow.
You name it. I was in those tiny little cities, and everyone I met, be it from just a regular person walking around to people with massive Trump signs on their car, on their house, you know, some of the nicest people I've ever met in my life. They didn't bring up politics. Didn't bring up, you know, you're from California. Oh, are you a Biden lover or something like that? None of that. People were the most helpful, nicest. Never once did I get the feeling that I wasn't welcome there. On the news, you see, oh, you know, the people in these areas, they're they're dumb, they're poor, they're you know, et cetera.
That's agenda setting, you know. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to jump over you, but I entirely agree with you. I don't have one side of the fence or the other in politics, because politicians, American politicians, horrify the bejesus out of me. But especially, I send out emails to politicians, and I can just tell you, like, some offices, when you call about issues, they'll laugh at you on the phone. Because, I mean, for them, it really is about protecting the economy.
I was just going to say that it makes sense that people are anti-change. If they feel like something is going right for them, and you come in and you try to change it, they're going to be against that, because they see the craziness that happens in the city, the crime, and in their world, there is really none of that. So if we're bringing our ideas to them, in their head, they're going to end up like us, you know, in the cities. So I get the apprehension to changing from a meat diet to everything else. But I think when people, like I said, as they read the science and as they understand that a plant-based, either part or whole-based plant diet is better for their health, I think people are starting to wise up, especially when you have health ailments that can be cured by eating less meat. That's, I mean, really, you don't have to go farther than that and say, eat less meat, you get better. Well, therefore, the logic goes, the less meat you eat, the healthier you are.
There's prosperity teachers on Instagram that are like, oh, no, what we're talking about, like Sinclair's research, they're saying that's bull crap, which I think is really weird, because I hate to use the word entitlement because it gets blown out of, it's becoming a word that you can't really use effectively anymore. But if they feel like their entitlement's being stepped on, and that in the masculinity issue, so like, yeah, well, animals are lesser creatures than us, so we should do whatever we want with them. And you'll even see churches that'll say, yeah, the Bible says we have dominion. We can. That's not what biblical dominion means, but they say we have dominion over them and we can do whatever we want. That's totally what at all. Yeah. But I'm just really surprised that some of these teachers were like, no, eat as much of whatever you want. Even that Secret movie, she was like, you know, eat what you want and you can stay as lean as you want, as long as you think positively about it.
Yeah, that entire self-esteem, believe it and it will come, that especially was big in the early 2000s with The Secret, that book, The Secret, and all that stuff. I think that was a perversion, and it basically took philosophies of, you know, Socrates, Plato, Aristotle, Kant, and everyone else, and it dumbed it down and took a little tiny piece of what they were talking about and made it to an entire movement, but only giving you a tiny little part of the answer. So yeah, I mean, I think that entire, I don't know if it's still around or if it's still as popular as it used to be, but yeah, that's some heavily flawed logic they got there. Just think about it and it will
come. A lot of people jumped on and started building on top of it, and it's that original premise of The Secret. It was kind of like, you know, like when you write a book for people, when you dumb down science for laymen, which science doesn't make as much sense to me, so I need the Science for Dummies book. But or somebody to break it out. I think people have expanded on it. I don't know. I like using the idea about positivity and gratitude, because it helped me to stop being a dick and as angry as I was. But, you know, because it's something that I have to manage, you know, because I get angry about the animal torture issue very often, especially when I'm listening to the music that I do.
Oh, yeah. Same. I mean, my musical choice is, I mean, I was in hardcore bands all through the early 2000s. And mid to late 2000s, and so it's either death metal, hardcore, metalcore. Basically, that's what I listen to, other than classical music and country music. Those are the three.
I have to say the things that you get to go see and the things that you go do, as we've followed each other on Instagram, I've always been just impressed as hell at the you get to do stuff that I couldn't even imagine, like going traveling and riding your bike across the country. And I mean, just, it's amazing. The
life. That.
And no, I'm incredibly, incredibly impressed. And, you know, it just, I was like, holy crud.
You know, I have to oftentimes take a step back and appreciate what I have and what I do, because anyone in any situation, it just seems like it's another day at the office. But, you know, so I do have to take a step back and look, you know, and kind of be thankful for those things. And I also put myself in a lot of situations where I'll put myself out there, whether I'm going to fail or not, I don't know, but at least I'm trying something. because that's all life is. It's just experience. So, I mean, I appreciate you saying that. I'm glad you noticed.
Unbelievably talented. And you're well-spoken, and I'm not saying that because you're having me on your podcast. Mm-hmm. I just, you know, I've been really appreciated the stuff that I get to see that you do. And hopefully, you know, I think you like some of the crap that I do. I'm very self-deprecating about my art. I don't have, you know, like when somebody says something super positive, it's like my brain goes, oh, what are they seeing? Are they seeing what I'm seeing? Because I saw through the fogs.
And that's incredible. Where can people find out more about you as far as social media, et cetera?
Well, Alaric H. Barca on Instagram.
It's been a pleasure. I hope we get to do this again. And next time you're in town, let me know. And I'll be at the convention.
One of these days, I'm going to give you a whole bunch of product for you to wear. I don't know why it's taking this long, but I'm in the middle of a restocking phase. So
that would be amazing. Anything, and I'll definitely wear it, tag it on Instagram and all that, because, I mean, I love your art, so I'm all for that.
So much, and I appreciate this.